You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simpler Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Can the current economy handle the global pandemic that increasingly shows it will be with us for a long time? Month by month, signs intensify to unveil the economy's weaknesses, leaving many to conclude that this economy is not flexible enough to bring well-being, but is delivering suffering instead. How then can we live according to a new economy? That's the conversation we are into today. Stay with us. Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. Well, we've agreed, Jerry, to build this podcast episode around the presentation that I gave recently to a Zoom gathering of the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace in the Pasadena, Los Angeles area. It's quite a mouthful. Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace. Well, I urge listeners to check out the ICUJP website for further information about this group, because it's really an amazing group. It formed quickly following 9/11 in 2001. To bring about interfaith understanding and to kind of head that anti-Muslim thing off at the pass. Well, they've held a forum nearly every Friday since. That's almost 20 years. It's truly an amazing interfaith coalition of learning and action. Well, they asked me to speak about a new economy. They recognize that the space we've been ushered into, not just by the coronavirus, but by multiple dynamics, requires a new economic model from what we have. The current economy is showing a weak capacity to handle the virus, and it's working for fewer and fewer people. So, all the while, climate heating continues, without the U.S. government applying the brakes, and that's true in some other governments too. Well, Grace Durness, one of the leaders of this interfaith group, says, well, you've been working, Lee, on an economy for a long time in both the U.S. and Mexico. So she invited me to speak, and well, I was pretty happy with the invitation and a little intimidated because I know that there's some pretty fine folks there. So that's how it happened.
So, Lee, let's get into what you said. A new economy is a tall assignment. Where did you begin?
Yeah, it's a little outrageous to think we can talk about that meaningfully in a short time, but I think we did, actually. I called my presentation Our Exodus from Superpower to Creation-Size Economics. Well, for me, a new economy doesn't work inside a superpower worldview focused on domination of others and on extracting whatever we want from nature as cheaply as we can get it. So as long as we stay with that worldview, a new economy isn't possible. So instead, we need to recognize creation as our primary frame of reference for all economic decisions. Now remember, I was speaking to interfaith communities, so I emphasized that people of faith can explicitly act from our various faiths to bear really startling witness to the need of transformation to a creation-size economy. We have, I reminded them, begun a most critical decade, that of the 2020s, because by 2030, the need of transformations will be too late. We have to act now. This decade has an apocalyptic reality. As such, it is filled with breakdowns of the systems familiar to us. We see it every day. But a real apocalypse reveals not only the inadequacy of current systems, this is important, it also reveals the breakthrough to what is new and what can be. So, at this time, we feel this anxiety and this tension. It's an enormous tension between powers and big money clinging to what privileges them, and on the other hand, thousands of grassroots efforts working from the bottom up to show us how to live a new economy, a creation-based economy. And that's exactly where the Jubilee economy fits in. Well, because this tension between the two exceeds any rational explanation. We need a framework in which to handle the emotions and the thoughts triggered by this current apocalyptic experience.
And what framework did you use in your presentation? Apocalyptic is a frightening word to many. It feels surreal. And yet, what are we experiencing today are existential events that do not have an end in sight. I'm thinking of COVID-19, of overconsuming, of overpopulation, of industrial farming, of authoritarian and fascist government, and of global heating. A lot of energies feed into this storm, and current systems are being overwhelmed when we assess them honestly. I guess that's what apocalyptic means. What thoughts do you have about how we live in this apocalyptic time?
So, Jerry, in the presentation that I gave, I used something from our previous podcast episode. Remember, we referred to what was called the adaptive cycle, developed by the late ecological economist C.S. Holling. And just a word here, ecological economist is different from an environmental economist. An environmental economist does economics with some attention to ecological concerns or environmental concerns. But an ecological economist, first of all, recognizes that no economy can work except within the context of the ecological reality of the region. So Holling is an ecological economist, and that already wins favor for me. So I think he gave us a useful framework for this bigger, to put this apocalyptic decade into this bigger picture. Now, adaptive cycle isn't a very sexy name, but he was, after all, an economist and not a PR person. But nonetheless, this cycle really helps us think about the rise and fall of human systems. As Holling said, they grow, then they conserve their success, then they weaken and decline, and finally, a regeneration of a new system happens. So that's the life cycle of the current systems that are building blocks of a superpower. Now, these systems are not eternal. Sometimes it feels like what we're in is what's always been and what will always be. World without end, amen, thank you. Well, no, they've not always been with us, and nor will they be so forever. So where are we now in this life cycle? Well, the growth phase happened as the industrial age grew and grew. We've heard lots about change from the industrial age to the technological age or the information age, that kind of thing. So there's some awareness that the growth phase of the industrial age has peaked. Then in the 20th century, policies and corporations conserved the gains made and urged people to buy our way into great living, and so over-consuming just took off. But already in that same century, the 20th century, early signs were indicating that it wasn't going to work. Scientists were already warning of greenhouse gases, and many economists saw that growth economics was outstripping the planet's resources. Well, now in the decade of the 2020s, we're fully into what Holling called the release phase, meaning that large powers of creation are forcing humans to let go of civilization systems that are killing life on the planet. Now, some people are desperately hanging on, and we see that right now in U.S. government, where people who've been privileged by our economy are just clinging to it, denying that things have to change, and just sure that they can hold on. Well, thousands of people have already let go, in fact, and others are being coerced to do so. And those clinging to the privileges of the past are moving into ever greater violence. Aren't we seeing that? So they're becoming ever more violent against change. But even as these top-down structures collapse, small-scale enterprises are expressing creation-sized living that rises into the consciousness of thousands of people. There, that's the life cycle of systems. The pandemic is hurrying the process along. A year ago, none of us were planning that within 1 year the economy would be contracting and the healthcare systems would be overworked. I mean, I just saw that this morning's news was that in the second quarter the economy contracted somewhere around 25%. None of us could have predicted that a year ago. Well, nor was there a prediction that millions of people would understand with new clarity that people of color have been forced by our systems to build the U.S. economy. And people of color continue to be systemically repressed and deprived by every system of civilization. That consciousness is just blossoming. Well, now the pandemic has exploded that consciousness about this systemic unfairness, and we feel the wrenching struggle of good and evil in this moment as the death struggle of what has been and the birthing of what is to be. What has been unimaginable is now inevitable. And here, by the way, I'm kind of drawing a little bit on Milton Friedman. That I have to acknowledge that I really like one quote he gave in his brief introduction to a reprint of his book, Capitalism and Freedom. He took it in the wrong direction, but he said, "I believe it's our basic function to develop alternatives to existing policies to keep them alive and available until the politically impossible becomes the politically inevitable." Well, Milton Friedman meant that when a current economy fails, that he can come in with what Naomi Klein referred to as the shock doctrine and just with great force bring in hypercapitalism. Well, his quote, nonetheless, can be taken in the exact opposite way, which is what I urge. Right-wing authoritarianism is ever a threat in this unstable, apocalyptic situation. But even if such authoritarianism prevails, even that tyranny will fail, but the toll upon life will be just devastating. So we really don't want to go there. But this is a time, if we think that having an economy that really honors creation, that is really creation-based, if we think that that's really impossible, a pipe dream, then in a time like right now, as the Hollings adaptive cycle suggests, there's a new opportunity for the regeneration to be that which is a creation-based economy. So there, that's a really important reality for any of us who are looking at sacred texts and learning to read them economically.
Okay, so I get the framework of this apocalyptic moment. You say true apocalypticism is about chaos and breakdown, but also reveals new ways to live. That it is a time of breakthrough? How do you describe the world that is being revealed as the breakthrough, that which we move forward? And what exactly are you saying when you say that faith communities need to claim boldly and explicitly the economics and practices of creation living?
So here, Jerry, is where I turn to the One Earth Jubilee economy, and I did this in the presentation to the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace. So I turn to the One Earth Jubilee economy and worldview. All of our podcast episodes present aspects of that economy and worldview. But then I want us again now in this episode to look at it explicitly as I ask the people in the interfaith communities to do when I present it to them. The name Jubilee comes from the Bible, but it's not a matter of a few obscure texts, by the way, that we strain to make work in today's world. Jubilee is actually a worldview that precedes the Bible, is active in the biblical narratives, and continues to the present. The worldview is akin to what indigenous people often call the original instructions. So both in the Bible and today, Jubilee actions resist empires and monarchies and their economies, and then also offer alternatives to those empires and monarchies' economic practices. The worldview of Jubilee is rooted in the organic structures of creation, not the corporate structures of civilization. So what I would like us to do, Jerry, is take our listeners through some contrasts. In my book, Blinded by Progress, I created a table. It actually goes on for several pages, but we'll just use the part that refers to economics. And so if you'll read the multi-earth worldview, then I'll contrast it with the one-earth worldview. So, or as you say, to put it too simplistically, you be the bad guy, I'll be the good guy. So let's read about the what this new economy looks like and show what it looks like by contrasting it to the economy that has prevailed in our lifetime.
Okay, we in the multi-earth worldview believe that Earth's great assets generate the greatest well-being when private ownership develops them. Publicly held assets of air, water, and land are ever subject to well-conceived plans of private ownership.
And the One Earth worldview, the contrast is this: belief that Earth's great assets generate the greatest well-being when they are stewarded as a commons. They are the commonwealth of all species. Maintaining and enlarging the wealth of the commons circumscribes the role of private ownership.
And we multi-earth people believe that profits are maximized for corporate and private benefit. Profits trump people's rights and needs, social good and ecosystems balance necessary for continued thriving.
And in the One Earth worldview, profits are calculated based on good accomplished within ecosystems for the social good and for the well-being of people and all species.
In multi-Earth, the sense of scarcity takes over consciousness as everyone competes for Earth's limited resources. Ads urge us to unlimited accumulation of more. No notion that having enough or being enough feels like abundance.
And in the One Earth worldview, a sense of abundance evolves in our consciousness as efforts focus on living within the generous limits of our planet's life-giving productivity. The abundance of enough displaces the sense of scarcity and pursuit of more.
In multi-Earth, growth is the primary indicator that an economy is healthy and functioning for the greatest good of all. When stock exchanges and GDPs of countries are growing, the world is a better place for all.
But the One Earth worldview contrasts that and says growth indicates health in an economy only when it fits within ecosystems of a region, generates a stronger, locally integrated economy, and serves the well-being of all people and species there. It's a steady-state economy.
The multi-Earth view is that economic structures designed for export-import flow of money, as managed by non-local, large multinational corporations, most often weakening local economies.
And in the One Earth worldview, economic structures designed for money to flow through local enterprises, fostering strong local economies.
In multi-Earth, debt is an instrument of economic growth and may be structured for whatever terms serve the lender's growth goals. Some regulations apply.
One Earth worldview says debt helps a community only if structured for the short term, such as 7 years. Longer terms quickly shape wealth hierarchy and undermine community. Economic growth cannot be linked to debt.
In multi-Earth, land is real estate, a basic tool of wealth creation and held by title to give primary decisions for its use to the primary owner. Considerations of use by other species are often overridden.
And land is... This is such a big deal, really. And in the One Earth view, land is sacred and must be held in ways that steward it as commonwealth for all. Primary decisions regarding it are made by community structures with a view that includes generations to come.
In multi-Earth, distribution of wealth comes to where power concentrates and more wealth accumulates, leaving behind areas of poverty both among people and creation.
In the One Earth worldview, distribution of wealth moves throughout local regions as power purposefully remains decentralized and cooperative, facilitating widespread sufficiency among people and creation.
In multi-earth, consuming, owning, accumulating, and saving are core economic activities shaping the lives of people and driving the economy.
And in the one-earth worldview, sharing, giving, cooperative holding, and stewarding wealth of the commons are core economic activities shaping the lives of people and driving the economy. So there's a summary then of how a new economy, a Jubilee economy, a one-earth economy, a creation-based economy, differs from the economy that prevails today.
Well, Lee, it just doesn't seem possible simply to leap into ways of living that embody a new worldview. We have to start from where we are, it seems to me. However, some people and organizations seem to be already shaping life within this more relational worldview. So it's not like we have to start from scratch either. What specifics do you recommend given the strong grip that past ways have on us?
Yeah, it certainly is a time for lots of unlearning much of what we've been doing and thinking. Faith-based actions, I'm thinking here of what congregations of all beliefs have taught as discipleship or as mission or as spiritual practices. These all need redefinition, and they need a redefinition now. So we have a certain urgency and hurry about it. So how do people of faith learn and teach discipleship that matters for the 2020s? Well, in Jubilee, One Earth Jubilee, we have developed recently, after working on it for some months, a covenant. We're inviting people to sign it. So listeners, we're inviting you to sign the One Earth Jubilee Covenant for the 2020s. And there'll be a link in our show notes that link you to the website where you can actually do this. But let me tell you what's in this covenant. We have several ingredients, and it's a draft, so some people are already suggesting additional ingredients. But we start off with banking. In a finance world where mega banks finance ecologically destructive projects and are protected from failing, in the covenant we say, I will use a local bank, a credit union, or a community development financial institution for my transactions. And then cooperatives as a model for businesses. In a global economy shaped by transnational corporations, I will shape my life around cooperatives and local businesses as much as possible. Eating. In a global unstable industrial food supply system, I will buy from the most local suppliers, from local growers, from farmers' markets, and grow some of what I eat. I will eat a largely plant-based diet, low meat, avoid sodas, and drink clean water and regional beverages. The fourth item is overconsuming. Given that the growth economy depends on overconsuming, I will learn the joy of living with what I perceive to be a just and fair share of what Earth supplies. There, by the way, Jerry, I want to give you a little shout out here and just call attention to your website where you have been focusing in that kind of thing for 25 years. I mean, it's longer than that. I'm saying 25 years. I've been saying that for the last 5 years. The next item is footprint. Given that 2030 is the date by which our lives and societies need to be reshaped to fit our planet, I will calculate the ecological footprint of my household through an online calculator such as Nature Conservancy or Global Ecological Footprint, and take every step I can to reduce the size of my footprint so it fits one planet. Recognizing we are part of nature, I will offset the impact of my household and participate in tree planting projects and other projects that align with nature's resilient ways. Then there's the issue of debt. Given that money enters the economy through bank loans, meaning debt, I will use no more than 2 credit cards and pay them off each month. Debt owed me that cannot be paid, I will forgive after no more than 7 years. If possible, I will join or help form a local chapter of a debt-forgiving organization such as the Debt Collective. And currently we have lots of interest in forgiving student debt because it's an incredible drag on our economy. Then there's the issue of investing. If I have investments, I will withdraw funds from fossil fuel entities and all others that are engaged in injustices. Justice giving is the last one. I will plan to give of my financial resources to causes that honor creation's ways, the work of justice and the work of One Earth Jubilee in the Mexico circles in my hometown. And if you don't want to give to One Earth Jubilee, I just want to point out the difference between charity giving and justice giving. Charity can work within the structures that exist and do good work, at least in many cases, not always. And then justice giving actually is giving that aims to change structures. So that's the covenant we invite you to sign, and all of these actions will move us toward One Earth Living, and it's important to do it in solidarity, I think, so that we say, hey, I'm not alone in this. Look at all the other people who are signing up. So this is it, just in its early stages. We have only a few signers so far, so you can go to the website and be among the early ones. So that's basically what I did in the presentation, Jerry. I talked about a framework such with the one that I borrowed from C.S. Hawling, and then I talked about a One Earth economy, what it looks like, and there we went through the table that I'd created about contrast that contrasts multi-Earth economics to One Earth economics, and then I really urged us to recognize that practicing One Earth economics isn't about environmentalism per se; it's about spiritual practice. This is our spiritual action in the world. All of these things I read, you know, choosing our bank is a spiritual practice. Well, how we handle debt, investing, justice giving, all these are spiritual practices. So those are the ways that I believe we can hasten the coming of a new economy, which is already underway, but we can add, contribute in each of our lives and each of our groups, each of our congregations, whatever group we work with, we can contribute to the advance of One Earth economic living.
Well, Lee, I see that you have an additional 5 points about Jubilee economics. Would you like to tell us briefly about those?
Well, let's see. I have to make sure I know what you're talking about. Why don't you do it? Because I'm not quite tuned into it.
Okay. Well, first of all, we need to read sacred texts economically. Mm-hmm. Secondly, Jubilee in the Bible comes from different authors over a millennium of time. It's mm-hmm. not a one-shot effort that didn't work and was given up. Mm-hmm. Third, Jubilee passages are in parts of the Bible that prefer a worldview that makes creation the context and measure mm-hmm. of all life, from economics to religion. Fourth, Jubilee rises from below and is most accurately understood from the perspective of oppressed people. And finally, get away from the capitalism versus socialism, which is fruitless and non-transforming. We do have an economic message that is able to transform people and societies.
Thank you, Jerry. I like those. And let me just say one more thing. I made that comment about to avoid capitalism versus socialism discussions. And out of that came some real learning for me, because one of the participants in the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace asked me if I knew about green socialism. Or eco-socialism, actually, is the way it's phrased, and I didn't. And I've looked at it now, and there's a lot that I really connect with on eco-socialism, so that's a little caveat here. Not all socialism is about a growth economy, though some of it, of course, is. Not all of it is, and so eco-socialism is something that aligns much more closely with a one-earth economy. So just to say that in passing.
And since we're having little side comments here, Lee, I would just like to add that green capitalism is not necessarily good, because green capitalism is also based on growth economics.
Yes.
It's just that you're growing different. In a green way.
It's
so we need to be really cautious when we advance green capitalism.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Lee. To our listeners, have you listened to recent episodes? In April, we shared some of the most thought-provoking interpretations of the pandemic. It was entitled Coronavirus, a Devastating Natural Disaster with a Message, Live Differently. In May, Life with COVID-19, Heading Toward a More Ecological World. In June, Pandemic Shows World System Broken and Opens Door to Better Choices. And in July, As This World Ends, The Light at the End. Do listen. You're sure to pick up thoughts you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. So please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. You can subscribe to this podcast under the name Simple Living Works at your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Come everyone who has thirst, those who have nothing come by. Why spend your labor for things that simply do not satisfy? Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. The bread in your cupboard belongs to one who is hungry out there, and the coats in your closet unused could warm up the ones who stand bare. Simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. See how the wealth you acquire is borne on the backs of the poor, whose children beg daily for food, whose land feeds your child who wants more. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Your children who need their own rooms lament that the forest will die, and those who would join field to field must stop long enough to ask why. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. God chose the weak of the world to shame the way of the strong. the poor. Their wisdom will help us belong. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Do not conform to the world. Be certain that better's not more. Contentment will transform your need, awakening what God has in store. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.